What is up, and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are pledging our allegiance, hopefully to the right United States, and heading down to Washington, D.C. as we discuss A24's newest film, Civil War.
A journey across a dystopian future America following a team of military-embedded journalists as they race against time to reach D.C. before rebel factions descend upon the White House. This movie stars Kirsten Dunst, Kaylee Spaney, Wagner Moura, Stephen McKinley, Henderson, and Jesse Plemons. We're going to talk about Civil War. This is big. This is a big one. This is not only big for A24, but this is big for movies in general. Very, very quickly, I just want to say, I want to let the listeners know that you just tried to pull the rug out from under me right before we started recording. I just need this to be common knowledge. We got on here. I texted you after I saw Civil War. Now, we have not talked.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you think about Civil War. You have a pretty good idea of what I think about Civil War. I wrote my review on Letterboxd the day before we recorded. Of course, we did get to see this movie at the kind of the early screenings taking place across the nation. And I was like, wow, I cannot wait to talk about this movie. And you kept your lips tight, as you do, Ben, generally. And then right now we get on to record and you're like, hey, man, closer we can get to an hour, the better. I got some commitments after this. And you know that I was like, 2 hour pod, let's fucking go.
I know. That's exactly why I said it too. We can't do a 2 hour pod. There's no
You gotta
way.
Rein me in. You gotta rein me in. This is why you're here.
Early. Yeah. Pull the rug out right before we hit record.
Let's the classic Michael Scott changing the location of the meeting right before yeah, exactly. We negotiate. Let's do one piece of housekeeping very quickly before we talk about Civil War, because we have a lot to talk about with this movie. We got a Maxine trailer, the third film in the Ty West kind of horror trilogy, the first trilogy that we've gotten out of A24 as well. Of course, X, Pearl, and now Maxine. I want your thoughts on the trailer. And I also want your thoughts on the fact that it is 2 minutes and 22 seconds long.
I don't have any thoughts because I didn't watch it. Here's the thing. I didn't want to watch it at work because I thought I was going to see it before Civil War. I thought we were going to get the trailer.
Did you not?
No, we didn't.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, I did not get the trailer.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I was like, I'm not going to watch it at work because I want to save it for IMAX. Let's watch it on the big screen. And then it just never happened. And then I didn't watch it last night. Today at work was just kind of a busy day. I never got around to it. And here we are. So I haven't seen it. I'm very excited for Maxine, though, because I do love X. And I think Pearl is fantastic. So I'm excited for it. These trailers, though, I mean, like you said, 222 in length. Like, I think the Joker one just dropped, too. And I don't know how long that is. But,
yeah.
You know, probably a good amount of time. So. I don't know. I'm excited for it regardless, even without the trailer, but I will report back next week and I will let you know what I think.
Yeah, look, let's see. Joker 2 trailer just dropped right before we started recording, which I think is very in line with what we're about to talk about with Civil War. Have you seen the Joker 2 trailer?
No.
Okay. It is also 2 minutes and 22 seconds.
No
long.
Way.
So
as a teaser trailer, that's insane.
It is a teaser trailer 7 months before this film comes out. Of course, it came out because of CinemaCon happening literally right now as we're recording. We are recording this podcast early before Civil War opening weekend, this coming weekend. And yeah, Maxine trailer. I think it looks good. I think it looks actually quite good. I'm very excited for it. Of course, you and I are kind of like locked in to this trilogy. I think we really, really do enjoy it. I think the 80s are going to be really fun. It looks sexy and darker than the rest, dare I say, even though Pearl, quite dark. The cast looks sublime. I'm very, very here for it. Trailers that are 2 minutes and 22 seconds, we have to stop. It is literally like the meme of Aaron Paul just saying like he can't keep getting away with this. We just like, we got to stop. Like, wait, where is the line? Because in 6 months, are we going to be getting 3 minute trailers? Like, I cannot have this. I want trailers to be 60 seconds or less.
It's honestly one of the complaints I have about Civil War. So I'm excited to get into it, but it is the trailer.
I very much disagree.
Okay.
All right. This is going to be incredible. Okay. Firstly, you mentioned you did not get the Maxine trailer in front of your preview screening. Now, we both went to this kind of early screening. For my experience, I got a trailer for I Saw the TV Glow, which every time I see that trailer, I get more excited for that movie. And I also got a trailer for Maxine. And I was like, sick. Saw it this morning on my phone. Now I get to see it on an IMAX screen. Bam, Civil War started 5 minutes after Showtime happened. Premium content. I suspect you were not in the same boat.
I think our theater was just running like a regular like trailers ad because we saw probably like 7 movie trailers, none of them A24.
Whoa.
We got some weird like sneak peek at Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. We saw some like 5 minute scene from that, and that was like presented by IMAX, obviously, because we were in the IMAX theater. But yeah, no, I Saw the TV Glow, no Maxine. I just kept waiting for it. I was like, usually we'll get the other ones, and then the last trailers are A24, then we'll get into the movie. Mm-hmm. And then the movie just started. I was like, oh shit, okay. Now I wish I had watched the trailer at work, because like I just wanted to see it on the big screen, but no luck.
Can I put forth an idea briefly? Yeah. That did not put you in a good headspace for Civil War, because I was in a great headspace. I was like, yo, we're here for A24. We're here for weird shit. And this is what we're about to walk into for an hour and 48 minutes or whatever. I felt like I was in the right headspace. I just, you know, maybe if you would have been in my position, maybe you would like Civil War more. I don't know.
We don't even know how much I do or don't like it.
Why don't you tell us, Ben? Why don't you tell us how you feel about Alex Garland's newest film, Civil War?
I thought it was really good.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm shocked.
I had a really good time with it. We had some, my partner and I went and saw it together. She loved it. You know, we had a lot of conversations about it. I will say, as it's gone on, the more I've thought about it, the more I've appreciated some things and wish I had other things. Overall, the production value of it is amazing. Like, they did some great stuff. Like, I think it looks fantastic. I think what I'm missing is maybe substance, I guess, of like, I'm curious about why did California and Texas break off. I'm curious, like, what is the president's like viewpoint? Because we don't know. We just know people don't like him, or the people that they're with don't like him, you know. I want to know. I wanted more of that. There were moments I enjoyed, like when it's a road trip movie, I'm having a great time, you know, like when they're coming across these like little moments, like, oh, I thought it was fantastic. But man, I will say one thing I knew too, I guess, going into it, was that people had been saying like the last 20 minutes, like nothing you've ever seen. Super true. That was fucking
very nuts. Very true. Can we just say real quick, I'll cut you off, we are full spoilers on Civil War. So if you have not seen Civil War and you do not want to be spoiled, because in fact I agree with you, there's no way you could guess where this movie goes in the final 20 minutes, and so we will be distinctly talking about that here on the show. So if you want to wait, watch Civil War first, come back to our conversation, totally fine. But here's your warning: Civil War is getting spoiled.
Yeah, it felt, man, I mean, here's my favorite thing from the movie. If this isn't at least nominated for some sort of sound design come Oscars, like, holy shit, this movie was amazing to watch in IMAX.
Burn it down, reset the sound design nomination, because right? I agree with you.
It was so good, the way they cut out the audio every time we're looking at a photo, which also just gets used really well throughout this film. It's a point my girlfriend brought up, just like, it can be hard in movies to like show photos and make it interesting, but this one does it really, really well, which I thought was a super good point. I think Alex Garland does a decent job of like writing female characters, and we got that here a little bit. I just wanted like more, you know, I guess I wanted more of their story. But yeah, I don't know. There's so many interesting moments. I was basically, my hands were covering my eyes at moments, you know what I mean? It's like, oh shit, what's going to happen here? Like, I have no idea. And then like nothing happens sometimes, you know, it's just like, oh fuck, you're getting me all worked up. Like, it felt very kind of almost harrowing and like visceral. It was just like, it got my blood going for sure. But I think, I don't know, I haven't rated on Letterboxd for the reason, but like, I feel like I left the theater watching a 4-star movie, and maybe it's become like 3.5 stars the more I've thought about what I maybe wanted it to be. But overall, I really liked it.
Okay. God, I have so many thoughts to share. We only have an hour. I gotta go. Okay. I genuinely thought you were going to hate this movie. I thought you would walk out of this theater and just be like, that was bad. That was just like, not for me. It wasn't my jam. There's a few reasons I thought that. Number one, obviously you were highly anticipating this movie. One of your most anticipated of the year, correct?
Yeah. If not most, yeah.
And generally with movies like this, we have differing opinions. Usually if I really like it, you really don't, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So I was concerned. I was really worried. So I'm very relieved to hear that you did in fact like this movie, because I thought this conversation would just be us having a tennis match. Just being like,
back and forth.
But it's good because of this, but no, it's not. So I agree with you on several fronts. Sound design, incredibly, yes. Like there's just like no other way to put it. The sound design of this movie, I believe, obviously in line with, you know, the harrowing violent scenes that we're getting, the warfare scenes that we're getting. I think it's important to like not rule out the sound design of guns and like gunfire, yeah. because that is imperative to this film. And I know we hear it in other movies and it's not really anything new, but something Alex Garland does do exceptionally well in this movie specifically is the juxtaposing sound design. Mm-hmm. Now that goes hand in hand with essentially like the juxtaposing tone and narrative and energy that we get through the entire runtime. Yeah. The entire movie is a walking juxtaposition, which I think is really fascinating. We'll dive into that a little bit more as we talk. I did want to bring up the fact that you mentioned kind of the harrowing nature and kind of covering your eyes and these types of things. So many moments in this movie where I just like leaned forward. I am that meme where the guy like leans forward, because I was just so locked in from the very first scene. I was super locked in, and it felt, and I've never really felt this with a movie before, which is interesting. From the start, it felt like just like anything was on the table. Like it, mm-hmm. at any moment, any single thing could happen. And sometimes nothing happened. Like you mentioned, like sometimes that's just life. And I think that Garland plays that really effectively and takes advantage of that in a really smart way to subvert our expectations sometimes, but also other times that we'll talk about. He does it. He does do the thing that you're like the most worried is going to happen. And he proves to you that this, anything's on the table. Like this is the reality that these people are living in, that these photojournalists are living in. And so for the hour and 45 minutes, I was just so stressed out. Like it was just so constantly like, what the fuck is going to happen next? And I think Garland does that well. Like I think we move towards the end of the movie and he delivers on that front.
Yeah. I mean, I think he does a good job of some of this stuff. Like the town, you know, when they show up in that town and they're just like, you guys, there's a civil war going on, you know, it's just like
crazy.
And then like we see the snipers or whatever up top. Like it's so interesting because in the trailer that came across is just like this town, like are there towns that aren't paying attention to this? And we kind of get a hint of that when both of our female leads talk about their parents who are just living on a mm-hmm. farm, pretending nothing's happening. I want to check in with that. Like, is there a place in America where like it isn't just a fucking shit show right now? Cause we aren't seeing any of that. But sometimes nothing happens. Like we'll get to it, but like the Winter Wonderland scene was just like,
for me,
it was the most tense the whole time.
Dude,
I was like, one of these guys is going to take a bullet right in the fucking head and we are 6 inches away. You know, we're just going to like, we're watching this on IMAX. Like this is going to happen. And then it's just like nothing happens. Like also like one of the funnier scenes too, you know, it's
hilarious.
Like, we're pressed. It's like, oh, is that why you have it like all over your van? Cool. Good to know. Like there's some funny moments in there.
It's hilarious, but it's also, I know we briefly talked about Ex Machina last week when we talked about Men and like the clarity of that script, mm-hmm. but I think Garland does it here as well, where he uses that comedy to play directly into the fact that like, guess what? Nobody fucking cares that you're pressed because there's no story. The story is everybody's fighting everybody. Like that's mm-hmm. like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to report on that's different? Right. Which is why we're journeying to the president. That's why we're trying to break this barrier and to create a new story. So I I think moments like that work really, really well. I have some questions before we get into True Cinema. Production budget of $50 million for Civil War. This is A24's most expensive movie to date. It is projected to earn between $18 and $24 million on opening weekend. How well do you think it is going to do? And do you think it will be a box office success or will it be a bomb?
I will say that, I mean, I feel like you can see the 50 mil on the screen, which is awesome, you know, which is really, really nice. I hope it gets its money back at least, you know, I hope it makes 100 mil and they'll, you know, back some of these directors that maybe deserve a chance. Cause you know, that was my concern. We talked about it as we were driving to the theater and I was anxious. I was like, I don't know if this is a like continued downward slope, you know, of just like Ex Machina, Annihilation, man, like, oh shit. Like, are we going to keep going down? Or is this going to be a movie where it's kind of like a, all right, man was a fluke and we're bouncing back, you know? And I kind of feel like it's more in that vein. So I'm hoping that A24, if they get their money back, will continue to like support these directors and give them the opportunity to like tell the story they want to tell the way they want to tell it.
I agree. It really does feel like you can see the 50 million. I will say there were some moments where I was like, oh man, A24 and CGI, $50 million worth of like, let's make a battlefield with cars abandoned on the freeway. Like maybe that's not their forte. But other than those, you know, sparing moments, it feels big. It feels very, very violent, like in its scope and what it accomplishes with the money. So I don't know. It's tough because this movie is already so divisive. It was divisive coming out of South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. It's divisive coming out of Preview Night, slated to earn around $20 million opening weekend. I just don't see how this movie doesn't have a steep drop off the second weekend. That's not me hoping for that, but that's just like, I think generally with broad audiences, if a movie is divisive or if people are talking about a movie and someone hates it and someone loves it, I feel like a general moviegoer will just lean on the side of like, well, I'll just wait until it comes to my house. And then I can see it. Like I'm not going to pay $22 to go see this on IMAX. Like I might hate this movie. I don't know. Where in my heart, I'm like, oh good. Like divisive is good. Like people are going to want to get out. They're going to want to see this. They're going to want to be part of the conversation. I just don't know if that materializes. I hope the best.
I hope so too. I mean, again, talking to my girlfriend about it, like we both want to go see it again in the theater.
Me too.
Because you got to experience it that way. And I will tell anybody that I talk to you about this movie, like that's the way to view this. It feels like the most open world game of Call of Duty ever is what it felt like to me as we were driving through, like especially at the last 20 minutes, you know, just like, oh, I feel like I'm playing as a press member of the press and I'm following all these other people that are like, everyone's just trying to kill everybody here. And it's kind of insane. So I hope the word of mouth is enough to get people to the theater to let them make up their own mind because it plays so well in theaters.
When will A24 make a Civil War video game? Is this slated to come out soon? Are they going to try and take advantage of the hype? What are we getting into here?
I was wondering what merch they're going to push from this, but maybe it is a video game. Maybe that's what we need, that Call of Duty A24 crossover.
It'd be so hype. It'd be so good. I would definitely play. Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. I really do. Is this a good movie? I think that's pretty answer. I think we both think yes. You mentioned wanting to see it again. I also really want to see it again. So the reason that we're pre-recording this is because I have work travel coming up. And I will be away working an event for my job during opening weekend. Now, I will have a Thursday night before our event starts and before I technically am like working 16-hour days and doing a bunch of stuff where I can go out on my own in Boston. And I've already looked. There's a 10:30 p.m. showtime for Civil War Thursday night at an AMC. I'm planning on being there. I'll just put that right out right now. I'm planning on showing up jet lagged and sacrificing some serious work sleep to see this movie again. So if there's like any takeaway, it's like it's worth it. It's worth it seeing this movie, not only in IMAX, not only in a theater, but just like in general. Here's the conundrum. On my rewatch, do I go see it again in IMAX or do I go to a Dolby cinema? Because there are no Dolby cinemas here in Portland, so I do not get to experience that ever. Is it as good as IMAX? I genuinely don't know.
I'm not sure, but you know, the sound design, we both talked about it. Like, I have no clue, man. Like, yeah, it's hard not to pick IMAX just because of the screen size, but
it's hard.
I don't know.
Okay. Alex Garland famously has been a bit apolitical about this movie himself. And the film also stands to be quite apolitical. You mentioned we don't learn about the president. We don't learn about the Western forces. We don't learn about the Carolinas. We don't learn about any of what brought us here, which I actually think is a feature of the movie and not a bug. And I believe that you feel differently. And I can totally understand that, because generally I would say, I want to know more. Like, where's the world? Like, how did we get here? What is this? What did the president do? Like, all of these things. But I think the main feature of the film is that it is just what it is. Like, I don't think we need to understand any of that for it to be successful. Do you think it is okay / wise / whatever for Garland to essentially remain an apolitical stance in this movie that is inherently very political?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's fine. I just think maybe it feels like a wasted opportunity, you know, where he could have made some points if he wanted to. But like you said, I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's like the cilantro thing. How some people can eat it and some people taste like soap. Like, some of this is going to be like, some people it's going to be a feature, some people it's going to be a bug. For me, I want more info, but for other people, be like, yo, that's a great position to take. So yeah, he can obviously do whatever he wants. I feel like there's a lot more story that could have been told there.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I don't disagree. I do think there was a lot more story that could have been told, but for some reason, I was just like so locked in. Like, I was just so encapsulated with the moment where I honestly just never really thought, like, oh my, like, how did this happen? How did the Western forces join? How did they finally get to DC? How did all of this happen? Like, it never once crossed my mind, because I was so personally invested in Joel and Lee and Jamie and Sammy and all of our characters.
Yeah.
Blocking, framing, lighting. We talked about the sound design a little bit. I just wanted to call these out because I think this is Garland operating on kind of a new level. And I think money does play a large role in this and what he's able to capture. I think the IMAX experience is a big one here. But he is very smartly able to juxtapose like the ferocity of these street level war zones with characters and conversations and still moments always remaining center frame. I don't know if you caught this or like if you picked up on this, but basically anytime we're looking at a singular character, they're always center frame, basically no matter what, which I think is a very intriguing, to say the least, cinematography choice.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it keeps our focus just right there, dead center on who he's wanting us to focus on. I think the blocking was really interesting, especially, you know, one of the best scenes for me is the night where they're, you know, I think just in some parking lot and we hear the gunshots going off in the background. And he's like, if they're still doing this tomorrow, we're going. She's like, okay, it's fine. It's like, cool. Like, I liked that part. But we just hear the like little like, bah, 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 like just like quiet things. And then suddenly we are just in it, like bam, just out of nowhere.
Right there. Yeah.
And the blocking of that scene of these guys that are both like hanging around the corner, like doing all the shooting, like the one dude who's stuck behind the pillar. And then we've got, I forget the main dude's name, Joel, but like he's holding Jesse's like vest, you know,
I thought
like
that was brilliant, a brilliant so little cool nuance.
Yeah. So I just thought so much of this was really interesting in how, you know, after it's all done, we just kind of see the two guys, like the lead of the military people. And then Joel just like shooting the shit, just like talking, you know what I mean? Like,
hanging
no big
out
deal. But again, like dead center frame. Like, it's just like, oh, okay, wow, this is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I think there's a lot to unwrap there. I was going to ask you about the ending. I kind of want to save that question until we get to the ending. Yeah. And then maybe as we go through this, we kind of suss out a little Alex Garland ranking here.
Cool.
I'm curious where we stand. Let's do true cinema. Let's start going through this movie because I want to talk about it. I have a lot of things to say. We open the movie. We really open the movie with Nick Offerman as the president and him preparing, reciting what he's about to put on national television. Now this scene, this opening probably 5 to 7 minutes, is in fact what played after the Ex Machina IMAX screening. So this is, I had seen this before and I was like, okay, cool. Like I know where we're at. And, basically he is gearing himself up to be like, this is life. Like, this is good. Civil War is good. We're going to get it all figured out. And then we meet Lee, played by Kirsten Dunst, who is essentially our old hand at being a photo, you know, war photojournalist. And I thought right off the bat, really smart play with camera usage how we're taking pictures of what's transpiring on TV and then explosions happening outside. That obviously leads to this rally. People are asking for water. They're asking cops to provide water. And Lee is here photographing. This is where we meet Kaylee Spaney, who plays Jesse, who is kind of a young up-and-comer who wants to be a war photographer, much like Lee. We also meet Joel, who is just basically like Lee's partner. They both photograph things and report on them for a publication and for an outlet. And then we see somebody run into the crowd, hoisting an American flag, and essentially committing a suicide bombing. And that's our opening scene. So let's just take a beat, like, talk about that for a second. kind of fucking wild.
It was so intense. I mean, that was my first thought when she gets out of the car. It's like, where's your vest? You know, and then obviously, like, he reaches for it. It's like, you got to show them that you're press, you know, if you're going to get any sort of, not necessarily respect, but at least, like, people leaving you alone or staying out of your way. And then just the way everything transpires. And to see that person running with the American flag, I was like, what's going on there? And then we see Kirsten Dunst, like, respond to it, just like, oh shit, and like grab Jesse.
She knew. That's the thing. That's what I find really intriguing, is like, as soon as she saw that happening, she knew what was about to happen. That this is not her first time being in a situation like this.
They knew and they let it happen. Can you believe
they
it?
They knew and they let it happen. It all comes back.
It all comes full circle. I can't believe you did it. I can't believe I didn't piece it together. Dude, such a fucking powerful scene, though. And just like, again, I don't know how many times we're going to talk about the sound design, but just to cut the audio completely.
Good Lord.
Because that's what, I mean, what it would be like if you were in that situation. You know, you're just like shell-shocked. And then I liked how he didn't hide away from like showing us the aftermath of these things.
Wow. No, he didn't.
Right? Right? Like, we saw everything, which was kind of intense and I think pretty powerful.
I think really powerful. And we don't only see it through the lens of Lee taking these photos. We see it through the lens of Jesse as well, taking a photo of Lee, taking a photo of someone dying. The first thing that I picked up in this aftermath was these cops, police officers, security guards with battalions, whatever they ended up being, working for whatever rubbles of government exist in this society. They only tended to their own people first. They did not tend to any civilians, which I thought was a really brilliant stroke to set the tone of like, here's our very distinct parting ways with government associated things and civilian associated things. Quickly want to bring up the soundtrack, because we just kind of like fucking vibe after this. And there's a few times in the movie where I was just like, oh, like we're vibing, which I really believe is, again, like Garling operating on a new level for him, just really smartly juxtaposing like this war and some of these scenes that we'll talk about of like, it just, people are just being shot like just point blank for being, you know, raised in China, specifically like this one scene. And then like we're partying. You mentioned like after the first time we kind of go into this raid and Joel is just like partying with these guys. And this is the scene specifically where I was like, dude, this is sick. Like they did it. They won that side, whatever fucking side that was, whoever they fight for, they won. And now they're having a good time and I'm having a good time. And I think, I mean, that's the point, but it's just like really kind of twists your morality into knots.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. I mean, just to speak back to your soundtrack comment, like I did not recognize one song from this movie at all, but I thought they all fit perfectly. Like they were so rad, like just like, you know, cruising along and just like helping set the tone for what it's like afterwards. And, you know, going into that, I know we're about to talk about it, but that hotel lobby with like all the press and stuff, it's like, oh shit. So this is like, you know, whatever, it's peacetime right now at night. So everyone just kind of chills and uploads.
Yes, it's peacetime and the Wi-Fi and the generators go out. And then you realize, oh, well, I guess we're not just staying in a nice hotel anymore. Yeah. And we're being warned that there are power surges and maybe you shouldn't take the elevator up 10 flights of stairs. Really good, really funny stuff for this scene. This is where Lee and Joel and Sammy are kind of having a conversation about, like, what's next? What's the plan? Where are you guys going? Lee and Joel getting ready to head to D.C. They're pretty reluctant to kind of clue Sammy in because Sammy still reports and writes for and produces content for whatever is left of the New York Times. So in this world, the New York Times is essentially shattered. And then the other notable thing about this scene is that Jamie runs into Lee again and has a very awkward encounter with her where she like repeats herself and she's really flustered. And I was definitely weirded out and I was like, oh, but I get it. Like she's a hero. And also you just documented terrible things. And so you're probably a little jostled up.
Yeah. You're probably a little shocked. I did like this scene too, where she's like, you share the name of one of my other heroes, Lee Miller, and then like tells her who Lee Miller is. She's like, yeah, no, I know who that is. You know, it's like sometimes that happens. You meet your heroes and you just like, you say dumb shit, you know, it's just like, I don't know what to do. So yeah, I like the scene.
Can we take a second to talk about Kirsten Dunst? Cause I thought she was really lights out in this movie. Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of other movies with her, so I can't like compare to some of her more famous roles, but like, I was so bought into her energy and her disdain and her like just aged, you know, facade of like, I've done this for a long time and it's still happening and I'm still tired. And I know we'll talk about it at the end when she kind of has her breakdown, but I thought she was sublime in this movie.
Yeah, she was fantastic. I mean, she carries a lot of it. This is one of the most, I think, powerful and heavy roles that she's had, and especially in, you know, recent times. So, you know, and I just can't imagine what this character is, you know, because they have to live with these characters and the stuff that she's seen, the stuff, the flashbacks that we see. Like, I think she played it really, really well.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, next one on the list here I have conversation with Joel. Lee has a conversation with Joel. Now, this is the next morning when they're getting ready to head out to DC. This is kind of the beginning of our road trip portion of the film. And we see that Jesse is in the car with Sammy, and Lee pulls Joel to the side and is like, what the fuck? Like, why are you bringing this kid with us? Which, you know, I think is an important conversation, a good scene. I think it's pretty funny. I think Joel is like really funny. I think Wagner Moura, who plays Joel, is really good energy in this movie and kind of brings that more comical in for us as an audience viewer. We later find out, if I'm not mistaken, if I did not hear, or if I if I heard this correctly, we later find out that he proceeded to get drunk the night before and essentially hit on Jesse.
Yeah.
And that is why she was able to basically get a ride with them. Interesting. Really interesting setup here.
It really was. When they brought that up, I was like, oh shit. He's
a creeper.
He's doing his thing. And they play a scene, and I mean, we'll talk about it, but like the two of them with Jesse and Joel, but it's played pretty straightforward. Like, I was worried it was going to have tones of just like creepiness, but I didn't pick up on any of that. And then later on, we find out like, oh no, he did that because he was like hitting on her. It's like, oh wow. Okay. That's so interesting that they didn't like play into that creepiness that could have been there for sure. But I mean, it's a great way to set up this road trip.
It is a great way to set up the road trip. And for me, they all get into the car and then we see like, what, I don't know, whatever, 875 miles to Washington, D.C. Like the text comes across the screen and I was like, oh, let's fucking go. Like, we're so in, because I was like, Nat, now we got a mission. Like, now we got to get across the Civil War madness to get to D.C. We know we're going to end up in D.C., but like, what's going to happen when we get there? I don't know. And obviously we couldn't have really guessed. Next here on the list, I have the gas station stop. We come across a gas station and kind of talk for a second of like, is it safe? Should we go? They see some people kind of hanging out with guns. They decide, yes, let's go into the gas station. They go in, try to barter for some gas and say, we'll give you $300 for a half a tank and two cans. And these guys with guns, there's like one kind of younger kid and two older guys. Obviously, they're just kind of like, this is theirs now. Like, they're just basically pirates that have pirated this gas station. And they're like, nah, like, you're out of your mind. Like, not for $300. And then Lee is like, Canadian. And they're like, oh, well, now we're talking, which I think is the only other time we talk about another country.
Yeah.
And something outside of the U.S. Civil War that is happening. But it does dictate kind of this bigger world that you're hoping to dive more into of like, oh, wow, the Canadian dollar must be strong as hell. Because for $300, like, he clicked right away. That transpires. And then the other main point of this scene is when Jesse goes to a car wash that's kind of down this hill and around the road. And in the car wash, he sees people hanging, dripping blood. They are still alive. They're essentially being tortured by these men with guns. One of the guys goes down with her. Lee then follows. And the big call out, the big, like, oh my God, we're doing this thing moment for me is when Lee asks the guy, like, hey, can I get your picture with them? Can you just pose in front of them? And he just guns it. Like, he just, no pun intended, but like, he just goes for it. And he doesn't think about it. He doesn't wonder what the consequences might be. He doesn't think about, like, what if this photo gets out in the press? What is this going to do to me? Like, he just does it because he's proud of this, of what he's accomplished. He's proud of his power and his violence and where he stands in the world. And I just thought that scene was a perfect encapsulation of everything we're trying to do with this movie.
Yeah. She almost like played into his ego, you know, it's like, oh wow, this is like cool. I should get a picture of you with the two of them, you know, basically like just to save Jesse. And I mean, we'll talk about it a lot more, but the juxtaposition of the way Jesse responds after this scene to the end of the movie, it's like she changed so much, you know. It's just like there were two alive guys hanging and she was freaked out, you know, to like to see what we get at the end, and she's just like, no, I need the shot, I'm going through, you know. It's like, damn. And but that is, speaking earlier, like, that is one thing I was interested about. It's like, because the dude says, like, $300 gets you a ham sandwich, not much more.
We have ham and
like,
cheese.
Holy shit. Yeah, it's just like, what's happened to the American dollar? Like, are we on a bartering system here? Like, what's going on? It is nice that we get the, you know, idea that Canadian money still holds its value. But even then, it's just like, you're definitely overpaying for what you're getting, but they've got to do that at this point because they need this gas. So I love that stuff.
I wonder what the border at Canada looks like. Like, I wonder what has gone in on that front. Like, if I'm feeding into this idea of like, I want to know more about the world, I wonder, is it like, have we put up huge cement walls? Like, are we dealing with barbed wire fences? Like, what do you think Canada border looks like?
Dude, I honestly, this is the stuff I want. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know. That's what I want.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. You mentioned Jesse essentially has a breakdown after this in the car. And she's like, I didn't even think to shoot. I didn't take a picture. I didn't anything. What I find so riveting about this movie is that in its short runtime that we do get, it is 1 hour and 49 minutes. And I feel like we learn so much and we evolve around our characters so much and our characters evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You called out Jesse, like, going from this moment to the end when she is able to capture what she needs to capture. And I saw someone's take on this movie, and they were like, characters are so flat, zero identification of our characters. I just couldn't disagree more. I just think every single character, sure, like, we're not getting the Joel story. We're not getting the Sammy story. Like, we're not getting certain aspects. I get that, but like, they change over the course of this movie, and they change drastically. And I think that's a point proven to, like, what is going on ages you immensely fast.
Yeah.
And look at Lee. And like, why do you think Lee is like this now? It's like dog years, right? Like, how old is she in war photo journalist years? Like,
yeah,
it's gotta be more than 45 or whatever she is in the film. Next one here, I have the nighttime talks. You mentioned Joel and Jesse kind of having a conversation. They have a conversation about like sleeping pills, if they're going to be able to sleep, because they know tomorrow they're going to be going towards the gunfire. This is where Joel says that gunfire gets him so hard. And I just fucking lost my mind. I thought it was hilarious. Sound design, really important here. A great slowdown scene. Again, like a movie of juxtapositions where we go from like horrific war moments And then it's peacetime. And then it's back to war, and it's back to peacetime.
Yeah, this was a roller coaster of those kind of action moments for sure. And this was, to me, I think because it's the first one, I felt like it was the most jarring. It was just like, oh shit, like we are right in it. Like we're not driving the truck to the scene. Like we are in the scene here.
Mm-hmm.
And just the smash cut from The Dark Knight. And I don't know, man, I thought this was so effective. I loved the scene and the way that, again, Joel is like kind of directing her around by holding her vest and all that kind of shit. Like, so good. And then the parking lot before, it's like, yeah, you rest where you can, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. you got to do what you can. So powerful.
Yeah. The really abrasive smash cuts happen a few times in this movie, and mm-hmm. they're incredibly effective. They're really, really smartly deployed. The first war expedition, you kind of mentioned, we get into this standoff with people that are fighting what looks to be like at a college campus or like some kind of hotel or something, kind of an amalgamation of like buildings. And this is where we get to see Jesse start to take some pictures. She's being held on by Joel. Then we get a big range of silence as we are seeking our way towards somebody that is calling out, that is supposedly fighting for the other side, whoever that other side might be. And they get to this guy that is up these stairs, and the human in me is like, okay, like they got him. They're either going to capture him, they're going to torture him, they're going to get some information out, and they're going to figure out who's doing this, where they need to go, whatever the case is, right? Like normal things that you would see in a war film. They see the guy and they just fucking shoot him. And then they start to party. And they're like, we did it. We won. Like, our side came out cool. Really fun paintball match. Like, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
And that's how you know, like, oh, man. Like, we've descended. Like, they don't even care. We're just fighting to fight.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a great example of the two sides. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, it doesn't even matter why you're fighting for the other side. If you're on the other side, I'm going to kill you. Like, that's all there is to it. And this was one of the first moments of like, oh, this kind of feels like, a Call of Duty thing where it's like, you've cleared the building, so you won. So now you just get to like relax or party. You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta wait in the lobby for the next match.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what's going on. So, and we see that, you know, later on throughout the film as well, where it's like, it doesn't necessarily, there are moments where it matters greatly what side you're on, but for the people that have guns, like, it doesn't matter. It's like, you're either shooting at me or shooting with me. So mm-hmm. we just got to figure that out. But I really, really love this scene.
And we keep diving into that idea the deeper we get into the movie. And I think it's kind of revealed more and more as we go. Next, they have the town visit. You mentioned the town visit. We go to this town and we go to the shop, and Joel is like, are you guys like not aware there's a pretty huge civil war going on? And the girl at the counter is like, yeah, we just try to stay out of it. Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
I think says a lot without really saying, you know, much. I think that is, to me, as much as we need to go into that topic of conversation, because I don't think this movie is necessarily intended to be like a warning fable. I didn't necessarily take it as that, and I know a lot of people have, and that's fine if that's how you interpret the film. It seems like everybody walks away from this movie with something different, like trying to pull something different out of this movie. And I think this little brief mention of, like, you mentioned Lee and Jamie's parents, like they live in Colorado, they live in Montana, like they're doing their own thing. They're off chilling. And that's how some people are going to react to things like this. This little town feels like a Twilight Zone, and come to find out they've got people patrolling the roofs, and it's not so much different. It's kind of like this facade of peace that's put over this town. Really freaky, really weird, really great insight. And a really important personal moment between Lee and Jamie, and photographing Lee and Joel trying on a hat, which I thought was really funny.
That was really cool. I will say, this scene made me wonder, like, how much did she pay for the dress? Like, if a ham sandwich is $300, like, is this dress like 20 grand? Or are they so, like, still in the world as it was before that, like, the dress costs like $200, like a normal dress might, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I left wondering. It's like, how much was that dress? I want to know. I want to know what you guys are doing here.
I just want the 10-hour director's cut of Civil War, where we just, like, every mundane task, we just want to, we just got to flesh out the whole
I want to know
facade.
Yep. Yeah.
Next on the list, car hopping on the freeway. This is where we meet a couple characters that are supposedly have like worked with Joel before. Tony and Bohai are their names. And I thought some crazy shit was going to happen here, and crazy shit does end up happening, but not in the pace that I anticipated. It takes a little bit longer to get to this stuff. And again, this moment of like joyful play, where it's like Jesse is like, oh, like I want to hop to another car while we're going 80 on the freeway. That sounds fun. And you're like, okay, that sure. Like, cool. We're just like in this little road trip movie. And then shit goes really sideways. This is the Jesse Plemons part. Am I correct? We go into the Plemons part.
Just after the Christmas Wonderland. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we might have these ones back
reversed. Okay. Yeah. After the town visit, we hit the Christmas Wonderland then.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about that briefly, because this is the moment, again, where I was like, hey, anything's on the board. Like, we're in a shooting range here. We're fishing a barrel, and they do end up getting shot at. They get out of the car. They meet these two guys that are trying to snipe this guy put up in a house, and this is where we get the conversation between Joel and these two kind of warfaring people, understanding what they're doing. They don't know who they fight for, which side they fight for. They just know that this guy's holed up in a house and they got to kill him. That's essentially it. We get a great commentary on the press and the press vehicle. And Joel's like, I'm a member of the press. And they're like, oh, that's okay. Great. That's why your truck says press. I get it now.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Also, like, really the futility of what that means. Like, not only in that society, but also like in our relevant society. Of like, do people even respect that? I don't know. Probably not.
It felt like some people did when they were with them, because like they let them come with them throughout the experiences, like, you know, entering into the White House and things like that, like in that other building fight, like they would let them there. But when it comes down to like, this person shooting at me, I don't give a fuck who you are right now. Like, I'm just trying to stay alive. Like, that, you know, trumps everything else, which is like, I need you guys to shut the fuck up, because I'm trying to like focus on what's happening right here. Yeah. But this scene brought so much tension to me, because again, like, we had so many tight shots of these characters, and I was like, one of these people's going to take it to the head, because this other dude is a good sniper. You know what I mean? Like, something's about to happen here.
Yeah.
And then it's another one of those moments where like, nope, nothing happens. Like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, I was worked up for sure.
That's just the tension of life. That's just kind of the world they live in. They end up driving away from this winter wonderland and running over the one of the guys who is shot in the middle of the road, and they just run straight over him. And I was like, oh man, that's like, even little moments like that, I was like, that's wild. Like, that, come on guys, like, that's pretty crazy. Then the car hopping happens, you're right, and then we get to Jesse Plemons, who is fucking A1 in this movie for like the 8 minutes that he's on screen. He is batting 1,000, bro. And he just brings it, and everything about the scene is crazy. I'll let you give your thoughts on the scene, because I'm really curious how you feel about this.
This was my problem with the trailer. I wish this had like been a surprise or something like that, because I feel like it was undercut. That line is so fucking powerful. You know, it's like, well, what kind of Americans are you? And I get why it's in the trailer, to get seats filled. I understand that. But like, man, this would have hit so much harder.
Yep.
And I wanted to like spend 20 minutes with them. You know what I mean? Like, I thought he was going to be a bigger character that we'd be like dealing with. But you're right. Like, every minute that he's on screen, he's just like throwing heaters. He's doing so good. The fact, like, when he's asking like, well, like, where are you from? You know, these people are just kind of afraid to answer. Like, I'm from Florida. It's like, all right, Florida, United States. Okay. Got it. You know, like, and the dude answers Hong Kong. I have no fucking idea why he did that. Just lie.
Just lie. Literally just say you're from anywhere in the U.S.
Yeah, anywhere else. You know, it's just like, oh, I just felt so bad. What were those bodies to you?
That's a great question. I don't know if I've really taken time to consider, because obviously there's a pit of bodies. There's a dump truck of bodies that, as we come up on this scene, Jesse Plemons' character is pouring chemicals over and they're dumping all of these bodies. I took it as like, that's the town that they just cleared out to just be like, we're at war, we can do whatever we want, we've got guns, And like that, this is the life that we love. We love to just have power and violence, and we just love to do our shit like this. That's what I interpreted it as. Did you get something else?
No, I think that totally makes sense. You know, it's just like obviously just the opposition, and whether it's just people driving through that they're stopping, or you know, who it is. Like, I don't know exactly, but I feel like they haven't let a whole lot of people go. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get that impression. So I feel like anyone that comes across them ends up in that kind of mass grave.
So I agree with you that it would have been nice to not see any of this in the trailer. And I also agree with you that they had to put this in the trailer to get asses in seats, because putting a line like, what kind of American are you, in a trailer to a movie, that it's an instant sell. It's like, okay, well, what do we mean by this? Like, where are we going with this?
Too? Like,
dude, yeah, so like, fire. Great. So good. His cadence and the way that he speaks is so menacing in this movie. We get Joel saying he's from Florida. Lee and Jesse answer truthfully where they're from. And we kind of get a better picture of like South America, Central America. Like, what are we divided into here? You mentioned one of the guys gets shot right out of the gate. And it's the guy that Jesse is with. And the reason that we come upon this is because Jesse and Bohai have essentially been captured. Bohai dies. He gets just shot right there in front of everybody. And then Tony answers that he's from Hong Kong. And then Jesse Plemons is like, oh, China, bang, dead. Just like incredibly quick. It's so scary. This is when Joel starts to have his breakdown, which I thought was magnificently played. And in the scene after this, where they kind of show up at this military camp, they're getting ready to go into DC. He is totally weeping and wailing and shouting with no audible dialogue, but he's getting massive army tanks and helicopters driven and flown behind him, which I think was incredible rendering of what is happening in this movie. I think the scene with Jesse Plemons is the scariest. I think it is the most frightening and the most damning and like the most crazy, because Sammy ends up coming in with their car and running these guys down and trying to save Lee and Joel and Jesse. And in doing so, he gets shot. And then we get this very Garland, very core Garland, like montage driving through the burning forests set to a really eloquent score while Sammy is dying. Yeah. And I felt the most connected to like Garland, nature, like this is his thing. He cares about like how humans interact with nature. And I thought this was a perfect representation of that. Excellent scene.
Yeah, we're just burning it all to the ground. Somewhat all over. Literally, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's this was a great scene. I love the, again, like the Jesse Plemons scene. Like, I think your point is right. Like, it is one of the most intense scenes of the movie, for sure. He's a menacing character, without a doubt. And I think that's just why I wanted more of him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to follow it up with this like montage, like this slow-mo, this all the amber and ashes like falling, like it was just like, it's so beautiful. And the I think we get the individual photos in this scene or something like that, I don't know, but like the photos that show during the scene are amazing.
Yes. Yeah. Last call out on the Jesse Plemons thing. Joel says he writes for or reports to Reuters. And Jesse Plemons is like, Reuters sounds foreign. And No. He says something like that, where he like plays off of the fact that like it doesn't sound like an American publication.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. Incredibly done. Okay. We've got the final scenes here. We've got Washington, D.C. We make it to D.C. And we learn that the Western forces have basically engulfed Washington, D.C. They're going to take the president. We're late. We can't get the interview in time. But Joel and Lee and Jesse decide to go forth, try to do that, and try to at least document what's going on. Because a key message, key narrative of this movie is we document so other people can ask questions. We don't ask questions ourselves.
Yeah.
I think is really key. Really, really key to this movie. Outside the White House, shit is insane. I mean, it's blowing up. It's just hardcore warfare that really only an IMAX experience can like truly capture. And there's a car that comes out of the gates. People believe the president's in there, and like a secretary or someone like walks out and they just fucking obliterate her. And this is where Lee says, president's not in there, guys. Like let's sneak around. Let's go inside the White House. Thoughts on this like setup for basically the downfall of the U.S. government of what's left.
I mean, this scene starts out with, if I know my memorials or whatever, you know, my, you know, this thing's in DC, like, I think they send a rocket launcher to like the Lincoln Memorial or something.
Yes, they
it's
do.
Just like absolutely insane. Just to let you know, like nothing is precious. Like we will take anything
we don't
down
care.
If it means mm-hmm. it's like, oh shit. Like, okay, anything is game here. Let's go. And then, yeah, we see the president's like kind of cover, you know, that he's going to go out. I thought that was interesting. You just essentially sacrificing these people, but at some point just like, well, they got to know that he's not going to be in there. So, like, what's plan B or what is the plan here, you know? And I enjoy that they, I don't know, I liked Lee's intuition, you know, because she's having a meltdown this entire time.
Very good.
You know what I mean? Like, she's just, like, having a breakdown while we see Jesse just, like, going for it. It's like, cool, I'm going to get these shots. Like, I'm going to take care of everything. So it's, like, kind of like they've flipped roles from that very first scene with the guys that are hanging in the car wash, like just like Lee even told her, it's like, oh, if you thought that was rough, like you haven't seen anything, like that's going to mm-hmm. be nothing compared to what we see in DC. And then we see it come true, but now we're seeing how it's affecting Lee. So I thought that was just like such an interesting character development for both of those people.
This is the question that I kept asking myself that I don't necessarily know is an intended question of the film, but I think it's a byproduct of this and our real world as well. Is like, Is there a limit to like what humans are capable of processing? Like, is there a certain line where like Lee is just not capable of processing anymore? So she has to break down. Whereas Jesse is full of processing power. Like she's never seen any of this. So this is her bottom, right? This is her like ground level, which is like, okay, this is the ground level and it's only going to get worse from here. Lee, this is as bad as it gets. Like she's been everywhere else. Earlier in the film, we see her in her flashbacks seeing people burned alive and tortured, and she's documenting it and not asking questions and not getting involved, but documented to send a warning home. That warning obviously is never heeded. Then we go inside the White House. We get kind of a group of soldiers, of Western Forces soldiers, leading Joel, Lee, and Jesse. A call that I wanted to make is that even though the Western Forces soldiers say, get the fuck out of our way, like, do not get in our way of what we're doing.
Yeah.
They still look out for them. They still tell them, I'm going left. You need to stick with me. You stay safe. And like, there is this interesting mutual respect for like the press and for what they're trying to accomplish. I think that's something to note. We go in. Jesse goes to get a photograph. They're basically closing in on the Oval Office. They shoot the secretary who tries to make a deal. And they're like, fuck that. We're not making a deal. They just fucking offer. And
I like
then,
that they're just like, yeah, no, bring him out for sure. We'll figure
we'll take real
out.
Good care of them.
Yeah, it's so good.
Jesse tries to get a photo right in the center of the frame, right in the center of this hallway, of this war hallway. Lee lunges out, pushes her to the side. We see Lee take a bullet. And the way we watched Lee die is through the photographs that Jamie is snapping and taking. Yeah. I think brilliant from Garland. I think editing wise, sound wise, really, really smart. Narratively, genius. It worked for me. I want to put a pin in this question about like the end and what you think of that, because eventually Jesse and Joel, they press on, they get to the Oval Office, they find the president hiding under the Oval Office, which like terrible fucking hiding spot. We got to do better. And he tells the Western Forces to hold off. Joel asks the president, because the president hasn't given a statement in 14 months, has not talked at all. He asks the president for a statement. And the president proceeds to say, look him in the eye and say, don't let them kill me. And then Joel says, that'll do. And then Jesse snaps a bunch of pictures, and that's how we end. And we get the Western Forces posing with the dead president. Yeah. And like, this is the world we live in now. We've succeeded. We've done what we wanted to do. Does the ending work for you? Because earlier in the movie, we get Lee very clearly telling Jesse, will you be able to photograph my death when I inevitably die in front of you? Like, those are the questions we need to ask each other. Can you document what's important, but what's the hardest? Well, she obviously proceeds to do that.
That's what, and it was actually like, it was flipped, because it was Jesse asking Lee, like, are you going to take a picture of me when I die? And Lee's just like, well, what do you think? Like, that's how she responds. It's like, obviously, like, I've got to do my job. So it's interesting to see that it's like, it's flipped at the end of the movie here. And Jesse's just like, yep, I'm just taking these pictures. Like, what else do I do right now? I thought it was a pretty beautiful ending for Lee in that sense. But yeah, the president's ending, I think it works. Like, part of me is surprised, like, they don't, like, take him hostage to, like, get information or anything along those lines.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, that they have no reason. Like, why? Like, it's the end. What is the president going to tell them? Why do they care is my question.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, is, like, they haven't done that the whole time. So, like, why would they start that now? So, the instinctually, it's like, yeah, take him hostage and, like, figure stuff out. It's like, they don't give a shit. Like, it's me versus you. That's what we're down to here. So, I think the ending works. I think that last line is great. He's like, that'll do. You know, it's like, yeah, it's, man, that so totally good. Works. So, yeah.
I think the ending really works. And I think Lee's storyline and Jesse's story, I think it works for me. It plays really, really well. I know a lot of people feel differently, but personally, it works for me. My true cinema moment, it's hard not to, like, pick a few things. Obviously, the end, like, that we're crescendoing to.
Yeah.
Is so big and so bold, and it works so well that it's hard not to pick that. But obviously, I've got to go with the Jesse Plemons. Like, we only get him in that scene.
For sure.
And I think the most menacing, the craziest part of the movie, by far and away.
Yeah, I think that's great. A scene I just want to shout out that I'll pick is mine, that we haven't talked about, is when they are in that the town or whatever, and they go to the football field where all these people are, like, kind of camping out, and they're all in tents, and they're just like, we don't have tents for anybody, but you can park your car there and stay there. And we get, like, I feel like a really beautiful scene between Lee and Jesse, kind of up in the stadium bleachers, where Jesse's, like, developing her film, which also is, like, fucking nuts, girl. Like, you're doing a film camera during all this. Like, this is insane. That's crazy. But we see a nice scene between them, you know, with Lee's, or Jesse's like, tell me, like, really what your story is. You know, like, I know the Wikipedia page, but, like, how did you get involved? And so I think that's a nice, like, kind of tender moment between them, surrounded by all this, like, violence that's going on.
Yeah. And that scene in particular too, Lee or Jesse mentions, like, still need phones, even though you don't have service. And she uses her phone to view the film and kind of runs it through, like, a film viewer. That, again, like, I think that hits just enough. And for you, it might've been, like, too much of a tease where you just want more of, like, how'd it go down? Like, how'd we lose cell service? Like, what are we doing here? Like, what's the background story? I think that's really smart from Garland. And I can see how that could be frustrating. So I think, you know, you can land on either side. God, Civil War. I think a really good fucking movie. I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it's interesting you let off the conversation saying, like, the more I think about it, the more time I take away from it, like, I might think less of it, because the more time I spend with it, I actually think higher of it. And that scares me, because I gave it a 4.5 on Letterboxd, and I don't want to be the guy that's like, Civil War, 5 stars.
I think our conversation may have done that for me, though. Like, it may have, like, kind of put it back up to the 4-star thing.
We're back. We're so back. Okay. I've got two A1X. Kirsten Dunst, I think, is very good in this movie. Jumanji, Anastasia, Small Soldiers. Do you ever watch Small Soldiers growing up?
No, I've never seen it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh my God, dude. Some people grow up on certain movies. I grew up on Small Soldiers. I watched that movie, like, literally every other day. Like,
Wow.
So I'm just going to be honest with you. That's how I know Kirsten Dunst. Is like, Oh, she was the girl in Small Soldiers. Great movie. Maybe not a great movie. I don't know. Last I saw was probably like 7. The Virgin Suicides, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Bring It On, all 3 of the Spider-Mans from the Raimi trilogy, Mona Lisa Smile, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Marie Antoinette, all good things. Melancholia, Hidden Figures, and The Power of the Dog, another movie that she is in with her husband, Jesse Plemons. Geez, it's tough. I don't want to be here on the show and be like, man, she's really good in Civil War, but, like, she was really good in Civil War. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
She's fantastic. I'm going to pick Drop Dead Gorgeous. It's a great kind of mockumentary about a pageant in a small town. And she's hilarious in it. The whole cast is hilarious. And I just recommend that to anyone who hasn't seen it.
That would be me. So thanks.
I'll watch Small Soldiers and you watch Drop Dead Gorgeous.
We'll do a movie swap. There we go. Road trip movies. That's our next A1 act. This is a road trip movie. I think it constitutes, I mean, we're going from point A to point B on the road. So we got Civil War, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Little Miss Sunshine, Almost Famous, Road Trip, Rat Race, Sideways, Transamerica, Cars, Zombieland, Away We Go, We're the Millers, Chef, kind of, Mississippi Grind, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Nomadland, Green Book, The Mitchells versus the Machines, Bad Trip, Dog, Joyride, It Happened One Night, Easy Rider, Paris, Texas, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Thelma and Louise, and The Straight Story.
I've never even heard of The Straight Story. That's amazing.
I haven't either. Apparently, it's a David Lynch movie, so we're not good for either of us.
Look
we
at
gotta
us
do better.
Outing ourselves here. I'm going to go with something that isn't on here, and it's
classic.
A movie called The Trip. Two British comedians, Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, and essentially Steve Coogan plays a food critic who's like tasked with going around to like different restaurants and, you know, obviously reviewing them, stuff like that. But the fun thing about the movie is that since both of these are like kind of great improv comedians, all of their dinner discussions are just improv. It's just them kind of just going back and forth and just trying to crack each other up. So it's really just like eating dinner with some comedians, like, and it's just, it's hilarious. They do a great bit about like their Michael Caine impressions, all that kind of stuff. I could watch it like over and over. They've made a few of them now. There's like The Trip in Rome and The Trip somewhere else. I don't know, but the original one is still my favorite. So I'm going to go with The Trip.
Wow. That's good. It sounds great. I've literally never even heard of that movie.
Yeah. I'm going to send you that Michael Caine scene at least. You got to watch that.
Yeah. Okay. I got to watch that. There's a lot of things on this list I haven't seen, and there's a lot of things that are very different. I don't think anything like falls under like a very specific road trip like genre. I will pick for this. I'm surveying the list here. I'll pick The Mitchells versus the Machines. I love that movie. I think that's a great movie. I think it's a really sweet road trip movie. Like, it's a family road trip movie. You get all, you purvey all emotions, all points of view. And it's a movie that quite honestly should have won Best Animated Feature. So
yeah,
great movie, great road trip movie as well. Okay. A24 ranking. This is the big guns here. We got to get serious. A through F 24 for Civil War, a movie that out of South by Southwest was deemed Garland's masterpiece. Does it stand by that claim?
So, I mean, I looked back at our old rating. We gave Ex Machina first cows. We both gave on our old system here. So this to me, here's what I'm saying. I'm going to give it a B plus 24 with the room to go to an A minus on a rewatch is how I feel about it.
Okay.
I feel like it's a solid movie. It's a good movie. And it has a possibility of being great on the rewatch. Nothing is going to really touch Ex Machina. Like, that's like an A plus movie. But this right now is kind of like neck and neck with Annihilation. And I don't know which one is my second or third favorite.
Okay.
I think I would need to rewatch both of them because I really enjoy Annihilation. And Men is obviously like bringing up the rear. But yeah, that's
I was
going to
clarify. Yeah. Men is in last place. Is
last
that what
place
I'm hearing?
For sure. Yeah.
Shoot. Okay. I think this is a very solid A24 in my opinion. I think it's hard to compete in the A plus range because you have movies like Last Black Man in San Francisco or Moonlight or things that are on that level.
Yeah.
But I think this movie has so much to unpack. It has so much visually that it states. I think it's Garland doing what he really does best and like capturing the things that he really wants to talk about and really wants to say. You mentioned you can feel the production value. It feels big. It feels like this next era of A24.
Yeah.
It feels like we're going into something new with this filmmaker, this writer, and this distribution company. I'm really excited to rewatch it. I'm
for sure.
I really can't wait, but I do think it is really top shelf A24. Like, I think this is, again, kind of ushering in this new era. It feels like to me. I really love Civil War. I really like this movie.
I thought it was fantastic. I'm wondering if it'll be like Oppenheimer, where every rewatch I appreciate it a little bit more. We'll
get
see.
A little something new every time.
Yeah.
Okay, we've done it. We've talked about Civil War. I'm so happy that you were not disappointed or let down necessarily by your most anticipated movie. So that's great. Next week on the pod, it's Steve Martin. Talking about Steve Martin, new Apple Plus documentary on Steve Martin, streaming right now. Two parts, 4 hours.
Yeah.
You a big Steve Martin guy?
So I watched the first part, the first like one already, and I realized how little I know about his stand-up.
If you know little about his stand-up, I know zero. I have seen like one Steve Martin in my life, and that's cheaper Steve Martin movie, and that's Cheaper by the Dozen.
Wow. This is amazing.
I'm so nervous for this podcast.
Okay. Yeah, no, I enjoy Steve Martin. I was just going to say I know him more as the movie star and less as the stand-up comedian. So the first half was so interesting to me because I just didn't know any of that stuff. But I'm excited for the second half where I believe it kind of delves more into his movie stardom. So I cannot wait to hear what you think about it.
I'm so nervous. I was like, how many days can I like watch Steve Martin movies in a row? Yeah. Cause like, I feel like I need to come prepared. I guess we'll find out next week if I do come prepared or if I just accept my fate as a non Steve Martin guy. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Probably too busy rewatching Civil War, honestly. So
that's totally fair.
That's where we're at.
We'll have something on the plane on your flight to Boston. You can find a Steve Martin movie. Or you'll just watch Oppenheimer for the
11th time. Watch Oppie again. Yeah, nighttime.
Makes sense.
Fired up.
Well, let us know what your thoughts were on Civil War. We're on Instagram and Twitter at 24 minutes of A24. Or if you have any Steve Martin recommendations for Ethan, please put them in the chat. Let us know. And don't forget to subscribe to our channel on YouTube where you can see our lovely faces every single time that we talk about a movie. Or an A24 project. I guess we do cover TV shows sometimes. So
yeah, we got a TV show coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yes, we do.
With an Oscar winner. Speaking of Oppenheimer, it's gonna be fun.
I'm excited. Thanks everyone for your support. Really appreciate it. I am Ben Lawhorn,
and I am Ethan Simmy. Spring break forever, bitches.